Conan, what is best in life?
To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of the zombie takeout.
Hello, and welcome to episode 461 of Zombie Takeout. I was not prepared for how accurate that would be.
Well, all it was, I mean, just to get, it wasn't even the impression, it was just an actor running entirely too fast through his lines.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Kind of had an accent.
Well, because it's not the accent. The accent, we're accustomed to Schwarzenegger's accent at this
point.
It's just how headlong he delivers that line. Like, there's no punctuation.
Right.
That's the part I wasn't prepared for. Anyway, without any further ado, on to this week's movie, which is from 1982, Conan the Barbarian. I have to consciously make myself say Conan instead of Conan at this point, which is weird, because 30 years ago, or how long it was, I had to consciously say Conan in reference to O'Brien instead of Conan.
And I think it was like in his first week where it was he had something with the audience of like, send in the best Conan the blank Aryan.
Yeah. Right.
Like he just dove headfirst into it.
Yeah. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Dialogue. Sometimes it just ruins everything.
And also brought to you by Steel, left by the gods, made by some dudes. So unique. They're named Smith. All right, so we have a nice little family out in the middle of the steppes, I guess. And well, damn it, a bunch of marauders come and mow down the village pretty much, except taking the kids. They didn't seem to have a whole lot for them to take, really.
Yeah, no, they just kind of burned everything and then killed the adults and took the kids.
Killed the adults, took the kids.
And
all right.
I mean, if they're trying to, you know, say culturally reproduce in a way, that makes sense. But why wouldn't you also take the adults for, you know, current slaves?
Right, right. Yeah, you'd split them up, you know, just you know, doing a little bad guy, you know, right. Motivational thought here. But, you know, they just, you know, I think even the narrator was like, we're not sure why they did this. I thought that was a good move.
Yeah,
the narrator just going, who the fuck knows why they did this? And yes, there is a narrator in this, and he's a character that comes more than halfway through.
Played by the great Mako. Great, nice to hear his voice as an Avatar The Last Airbender fan. You know, his voice is very special to me.
And this kid is then, after seeing his family die, his father pretty much eaten by dogs, and his mother beheaded right over him, he is taken to... I guess it's a mine that was.
Well, eventually a mine. He kind of grows up pushing one of those wheels.
Right. It's the wheel. I think that's for a mine. Either that or it was a water drill or
it's
something.
A water drill. Could be a mill. Could be a lot of things.
Or just a MacGuffin factory. Yeah, I'm not really
it's
sure.
It's just a way to show a kid growing into a very, very burly man. And to kind of explain how he gets so burly.
You know, they do this series of montages in the movie, but you know, they kind of had to because, well, he goes from a kid to Arnold Schwarzenegger. Mm. And he then becomes a he's the purchased when they see like how big this guy is. It's kind of funny that when they come to get him, he's like the only one pushing the wheel. Everybody else is dead and he's just pushing it on his own. They must have fed him quite a bit, though, for him to grow like that, at least.
Hmm.
He's taken to become a gladiator. They didn't really give him much training to be a gladiator. They just threw him in the ring. And he kind of got bitten and then, you know, just killed the guy with his brute strength.
And this is the first thing that demonstrates the hilarious dichotomy of something from this time period, 80s. Okay. later in the movie, we get a scene that is overtly homophobic, but those gladiator scenes are incredibly homoerotic.
I mean, I could have been the only one thinking about the movie Airplane.
Yeah.
Which was only like a year or two before this.
Right.
Just, I was going to say Leslie Nielsen, but no, it was the Mission Impossible guy, Peter Graves.
I mean, people joke about wrestling being homoerotic. This stuff is like that on 11.
Oh, of course. And, well, of course, he turns to be pretty good at being a gladiator, at killing people. And they start training him in weapons. And I think the obvious thing would have been in this, though. If they train you to be that much of a killing machine and that good at it, aren't the odds of you turning that on the owners going to happen sooner or later? You know, they placated him by throwing women at him and, you know, whatever, while he was pretty much an animal in a cage. But
until they also allowed him to become educated.
Yeah, that was weird, too. Why would you do that if you just want this guy for entertainment, you know?
Yeah.
But they do let him read and write. And one day, his owner just decides, well, that's enough, and lets him go in the middle of the night. And so he wanders the earth like Cain from Kung Fu, of course. Mm.
Assembles his party.
Well, first he runs into probably the most interesting seer scene I've ever seen in a movie, you know? Normally you get the man from scene 24.
Right.
This we get fucking in fire.
Yeah.
So she, of course,
must have gives him the riddle. Orgasm.
Right. She gives him the riddle that you normally see some old bearded man in robes give the, you know, the guide. You know, whatever Joseph Campbell, you know, talisman sort of thing, Gandalf or whatever to do. Instead, it's, you know, some hot chick that he bangs and then burns.
And then she kind of turns into a monster witch thing.
Right.
And
yes.
He throws her into a fire.
Yes.
And she hisses the prophecy.
Right. So he goes on his way to then assemble the party. A thief who introduces himself as a thief, who, I mean, if you introduce yourself as a thief, you can't be a very good thief.
Well, and you never trust the rogue, except in this case, the rogue was the one you could trust.
Right, right. Well, and if he's saying he's a rogue up front,
well, yeah, you know, true. That's fair.
Then it's like, wow, okay, right, we'll go with it. And then he runs into another thief. So it's a very interesting party of two thieves and a barbarian.
Okay. I kind of saw her as a fighter.
Ha. I don't know. Hmm. Oh, she was pretty good with the sword, but...
I mean, her main thing was swinging a sword.
She was trying to break... They were breaking into the same tower together.
But, I mean... Well, I'm not going to spoil my whatever I learned, but, you know, people often do things that are outside of their class.
Maybe.
Thieves don't just break in. Rogues thieves don't just break into things. They have to fight sometimes. Sometimes a fighter has to break into something.
And, well, so they, of course, she gets hits it off with our barbarian hero. And let's see, they plan to steal a bunch of stuff from the bad guys, the same ones that killed his family, and...
they have to talk him down. The thief basically says, you know, first we'll go in there and steal their shit, and then we'll come back and kill the motherfucker.
And of course, that turns out to be wrong. They should have just come into the kill immediately, because that was giving them too much of a chance to retaliate.
Mm-hmm.
But they, of course... do just that. They have they retreat. They they lose some members of the party along the way. They for some reason they don't attack immediately, of course, giving them time to set up a bunch of traps and dig in.
Well, there were only four party members. You know, the the thief disappears for a while. But they don't really lose
I forgot
him.
about that. I forgot about that part. He sneaks off first to go in on his own to infiltrate and try to assassinate the the snake that killed his family. And almost he pretty much does get killed himself, but they have a the wizard somehow has a resurrection spell, and really just fights off the very realistic demons that come to take his soul in the middle of the night.
Yeah,
it's 1982 though. What can you do? 1982 realistic. Yeah, they did. They did. They looked like some dude. It was a step below the Aha video.
Yeah.
So then they go in to steal some more. Actually, they get enlisted to kidnap, well, not kidnap, to take the king's daughter back.
She's involved in a cult, in the snake cult that
Darth Vader is running.
Yeah.
And so they go in just for that. They talk Conan down from not killing everybody in the whole motherfucking house.
Now, we're going to make a lot of D&D references because this movie is a D&D campaign. But I just want to point out, a barbarian, a rogue, a fighter, and an old wizard go in to rescue a princess. In 82.
Held by Darth Vader. Yeah,
held by James Earl Jones. I forgot that part.
Yeah.
Because Chewie is a barbarian, let's be real.
You know, you're right. I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, he is exactly a barbarian. And, so one of them does not make it out, of course, and they have to, then they have to set up the trap and dig in, and of course, the bad guys fall right into this trap. They don't say, whoa, they're pretty heavily fortified in there. Maybe we should attack them at another time. No, they go all in, and they have a nice big old battle, and let's say hilarity ensues at this point.
And Mako's opening monologue, if it hadn't been Mako, would have been hilarious. It was already hilarious, but it would have been even worse if it wasn't Mako. I should point out, for those who don't know the reference, Mako played Uncle Iroh, General Iroh, on Avatar The Last Airbender. I'm a huge fan of it. So, you know, I associate his voice with that character. So it brought a little more, you know, of a connection to the character for me. But any other actor doing that voiceover would have just been cringeworthy.
Yeah.
And I only understood what was happening during the credits because I read the summary. Because it's the scene of a guy forging a sword in all the smoke, and you see a woman's face looking on and a kid's face, and he was showing his kid how to forge a sword. And the kid, of course, was Conan. Conan.
Conan.
I'm going to keep doing that.
And of course, I think I remember the score to this movie a lot more than the actual movie itself. And it also doesn't help that I think The Destroyer is very similar to this movie.
I don't think I've seen The Destroyer. I didn't see this one until maybe sometime in the last five years.
I think I remember the wizard in that one being very similar to the wizard in this one.
Okay.
The thief's a bit different. The thief's a bit more, you know, like a comic relief kind of guy. And the princess is who he's going to rescue or whatever, and I think they wind up hitting it off there.
Right. Now, early on, when his father is giving him the all of this will be yours one day speech, and he's explaining their religion, he talks about how their god Crom was fooled at one point. If he can be fooled, is he worth worshiping?
Ah, you know, the ancient gods, it was all sorts of weird, stories they had.
And I mean, Crom, throughout the movie, goes on to prove that he's either useless or just doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's always the thing. Mm. But back to the score. The beginning, just that theme at the beginning is just amazing. I could just see John Milius, the director of this, just going like, you know, just asking for testosterone music form to accompany like the sword phallic images, you know, the going dipping into the soft snow and all that.
But the music during the raid was just a bit too triumphant for what was happening.
Oh, that was weird. That was like, and I think they reused that music in The Destroyer too.
Oh God.
Right. It was like the Mozart, wasn't it? Yeah. I'm trying to remember which Mozart piece, but yeah, it was very strange to use that
very
in the middle of a raid.
Sounding music during, you know, Conan's village is getting burned. And horseback fighting in movies always looks so cheesy.
Yeah. Like, how do you not just hit the horse?
Yeah. I mean, it is a real thing. I mean, katanas have a curve so that they could be drawn on horseback.
Right.
That's the whole reason they're curved. Any curved sword is probably the same deal. But, you know, it just, I guess because you can't really hurt the animals, you know, it kind of restricts what you can do. Speaking of looking ridiculous, the wigs on James Earl Jones, particularly the first one with the longer bangs.
Yes! It was like he took Darth Vader's helmet and made it hair.
Yeah. Yeah. And he has this kind of staring contest with Conan's mother.
Yeah.
I know it was supposed to be some kind of magic thing, but it just looks creepy and ridiculous.
I think you learn that it's like a snake kind of thing later on.
Well, his only magical powers seem to be like controlling people and occasionally turning a snake into an arrow.
He turns into a snake at one
point.
Oh, yeah,
he does turn into a snake at one point, right. Yeah.
But what, talk about brilliant casting, though. The kid looked just like Schwarzenegger.
I didn't really see him. He's just kind of a nondescript kid. But
he kind of had the same facial expression and everything, too. It was pretty, for a kid casting, it was very impressive, usually.
It worked. Because there was very, very little dialogue early in the film.
Yeah, yeah.
So the kid didn't really have to act. He just had to sit there and look like Schwarzenegger, I guess. I didn't see her beheading coming, the mother. That caught me off guard.
Well, yeah, because it looks like, and of course, you're thinking about this, they're marauding barbarians or whatever. You know, they're going to rape and pillage. Mm-hmm. And to come up with someone that, come across someone that looks like that, and just be like, we'll just kill him.
Especially when he's having the staring contest, you know it's some kind of magic thing. You think he's just going to, you know, take control over.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he just grabs a sword and takes her head off.
Yeah, I wonder if it was because he couldn't take control of her.
Maybe. Also, okay, when we get to grown-up Conan, he's, like, clearly, like, very cleanly shaved. It's always weird to me when characters in fantasy films are clean shaven.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to remember the movie we did that was kind of a knockoff of this earlier on, where everybody was just, I mean, you know, the women are of course half dressed.
Deathstalker?
It may have been that one, and just how well groomed everybody is. Why wouldn't Conan have a beard?
Yeah,
when's he shaving?
Right. Yeah. I mean, some people just can't grow facial hair. I know Schwarzenegger isn't one of them because I've seen him with a beard.
Yeah.
But you know, you could argue maybe he just doesn't grow it, but you know, it still looks clearly shaved.
And in the end, he has a beard.
Oh, that's
when
right,
he's sitting
he does.
On the throne.
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Which is
so
kind of like, why did you guys do this, man?
Yeah. I should mention the movie was co-written by Oliver Stone.
Yes. But
which amuses me.
Of course, you know, Milius, Walter from Big Lebowski.
I was going to ask, is this our first Milius movie? I think it might be.
I think it is.
Because we've mentioned Milius in reference to Walter and
I think we talked about him in the Lebowski review, which is probably like 5 years ago or something.
And his involvement with Star Wars. you know, kind yeah. of giving Lucas the, I think he kind of inspired the idea for Lucas.
Well, a lot of it came from Apocalypse Now, you know, Lucas decided that's what he was going to set in space, right. and that became Star Wars. Yeah. But if you look at the ending of this movie, the last scene where he finally confronts Darth Vader, or James Earl Jones, or, you know, Grum,
Grum was the god.
What was James Earl Jones' name?
I don't remember. I just had James Earl Jones.
I thought it was something with a G.
Okay. I don't have any character names.
When he confronts her at the end, it is very similar to the scene where Willard confronts Kurtz at the end of Apocalypse Now. And Milius did write the first, you know, him and Lucas wrote the first screenplay for it.
Okay.
Only they were crazy. They wanted to go to Vietnam and film it in Vietnam, even though the war had just ended. So, like, when they were having the crazy evacuation in, like, 74, 75, they were like, hey, let's get a film team together and go in and film our movie there. And, of course, the studio was saying, fuck you, no.
Given that Milius was the inspiration for Walter Sobchak, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Right.
Now, right after those homoerotic gladiator scenes, we see Conan, the only character whose name I remember, posing with these amazing fist weapons. Like, we get, like, we see like three or four of them.
Right.
With, like, punch blades and shit. That was very fun as someone who plays, you know, a pugilist now in Final Fantasy 14 and played a lot of rogues. And wow, I just have a soft spot for fist weapons.
The question is, why hasn't he ever used them after that?
Yeah.
He's good at them and has used them.
Well, he has the giant sword.
Yeah, everything is about the BFS.
Yeah. He looks a bit awkward swinging it around, though. And I couldn't help remembering the line from In-N-Out. Arnie doesn't dance. Arnie can barely walk.
Okay.
Do you remember In-N-Out?
In-N-Out, was that...
Kevin Klein.
Okay, yeah. That's the movie I thought. I don't remember.
He's listening to the tape to try to tell him how to act straight.
Okay.
Arnie doesn't dance. Arnie can barely walk. Seeing him swinging that sword around, I'm like, yeah, he's way too muscle-bound to be swinging a sword around like that, because he's using these techniques that are very agile. You know, he's not approaching it like a barbarian. He was just, you know, just hacking and slashing and just using it like a club, basically.
There was no beast mode. He was much more of a fighter than a barbarian.
Well, he also wasn't drunk for 90% of the movie. He can't be a barbarian.
That's true, too.
The skeleton was a nice head fake when he's, you know, in the crypt stealing the second sword and that skeleton starts to move. I enjoyed that head fake because he thought the skeleton was going to come alive. And apparently Krom, this useless god that he worships, runs Valhalla. Because when he meets the monk, they're talking about the gods they worship. And it was actually fairly amicable. Like, you couldn't have a conversation like that about religion today.
It is funny that, you know, they're in this dark age kind of thing and just like, oh, yeah.
Just, you know, amicably discussing their different religions and, you know, it doesn't turn into an argument. But he says Krom runs Valhalla. Why would you steal Valhalla? I mean, from a writing perspective, why not just invent a word that is, you know, Krom's afterlife?
I think then you'd have to explain what it is and stuff.
Yeah.
I think using that as a shorthand, you know, people know that's the afterlife for warriors.
Yeah.
You know, who knows if that's Milius Stone or if that is actually in the original comic.
That's true. I'm not familiar with
the original comic all that much, honestly.
Same. And I think it was stories before it was a comic. And I don't know the original Conan. And that Valhalla could be from that. That's true. Those initial traveling scenes with the thief were hilarious. I mean, it's medieval fantasy, like 90% of it is walking, but the scenes in the towns where they're just kind of getting into these hijinks.
And props to them for actually acknowledging how bad everything would smell back then.
Yeah.
All the other grooming is taken care of. The visual grooming is taken care of, but, you know, the ladies are all shaved.
Yeah, weirdly.
But, yeah, people smell.
Knights in days of old, when knights were bold and toilets weren't invented.
Yeah.
And okay, so they break in to steal the jewel, and he sees this, the standard of Jones's character, the snakes,
Two
his enemy,
snakes.
his enemy's mark, and he lingers, which it gets him attacked by this giant, snake. Okay, he's lingering during a heist. Maybe he is a barbarian. And at that point, I think the best actors were Jones and, the king.
Yeah.
The king who hires them.
Was that Sudow?
I don't remember names again. Oh, Sydow, probably Max von Sydow, yeah.
Yeah.
He's in the movie. I didn't remember where. But yeah.
Covered in, makeup and
Right,
stuff.
right. But yeah, so him and James Earl Jones, brilliant actors. Jones hadn't really had a chance to do much acting at this point. He had like one scene at the beginning in a ridiculous wig.
Probably
But
more stage acting before this than anything, but Doctor Strangelove and
Right,
stuff.
right. But yeah, Sydow is just like amazing in this one scene amid this just tripe.
Yeah, he was King Sar or
Yeah.
Sar Osric, I'm sorry.
The romantic scenes just didn't work. No
Of
chemistry
course not.
between
Oh,
Sandell
yeah.
Bergman and
Just
Schwarzenegger.
terrible. About as much chemistry as him and the seer.
Yeah.
He burned her in the middle of it.
Except they had several scenes together like that.
Right.
And then we get the wizard finally completing the party. Mako bought it a brain for me.
And she has one of the worst attempts at a catchphrase I think I've ever seen in a movie. Do you want to live forever? It just doesn't work, man.
This was 82. When was Highlander?
I think
After?
86.
Okay, it was quite a bit after. So
Yeah.
Highlander stole it and twisted it a little bit. Or if Queen did. I don't know who
Yeah, I
came
was
up
gonna
with Who
say
Wants to Live Forever.
it was Queen that it works in a song,
Yeah.
sure, but just as like you want to live forever, just like, and then she has a bunch of monologues of no, we should stay away and do this, and I'm half expecting Schwarzenegger to turn and say, do you want to live forever? Because she's saying we shouldn't go in and fight and do what we do.
Co-written by Oliver Stone. That's all I'm saying.
All it needed was Joe Pesci in a ridiculous wig.
Yeah. And then when they do capture Conan, I'm honestly not doing that intentionally.
Who is the thief? Andy Richter?
When they do capture him, Jones, calls his henchmen over to help throw him in a well. And this dude walks over in this like modern black leather trench.
I refer to them as the members of Spinal Tap.
Yeah, he looks like some dude from like a 70s band. Like the guy with the hammer, he really does look like a member of Manowar. One of my
Yes, he
perspective titles
does.
was based on a song based on the music of Manowar, because their entire catalog is this kind of shit. But he looks like a member of Manowar. But the other dude is like looks like a roadie for Sabbath. He's just like, long hair, a mustache, and this leather
Yes.
coat.
Yeah, I think if I remade this, I would have, I'd have Shearer and
Yeah. And of course, he splits the party, so it almost gets him killed.
Yeah, he never split the party.
See the ghosts. I have a note about the ghosts looking bad even for 82. Oh, the black makeup they use when they sneak back in.
What the fuck was the point of that?
I mean, it's kind of like in the Godier video, somebody I used to know, the paint that's on his face, but all black. They look like, or better yet, the Warrior Scandal. They look like extras from that video.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
It was just very new wave. It was 82. I mean, a
Yeah,
little
it
ahead of its
was.
time, I suppose, but the beheading while they were rescuing the princess was some nice gore. There wasn't much gore in this movie, but when they did it, they did it well.
Yeah, there were some nice splatters during some of those battle scenes, some of those horse fights.
Although for being this, legendary action film that people love, the fight choreography was pathetic.
I think we've come a long way with fight
Yeah,
choreography.
yeah.
I mean, have we ever seen a movie before, say 1990, where there was good fight choreography?
I want to say Enter the Dragon, because Bruce Lee.
Yeah. But then again, but it was just Bruce Lee.
Zatoichi, I remember being pretty good for like the one-on-one fights.
Right. Once you get into the crowds, though, you had a
Yeah.
bunch of extras
Yeah, then it
standing
was a
around, kind of
problem.
like,
Yeah,
what
that's
am I
true.
doing here?
I do like that the princess was a brainwashed cult member at the end. She wasn't like thankful. She was like begging James Earl Jones' character to rescue her.
Yeah, and that kind of, I think, broke it in the end when he left her. It's kind of like,
And his beheading again, some nice gore. Sequels and remakes.
well, yeah, the Spinal Tap.
Well, like you said, Conan the Destroyer, 84, and
I'd say
then,
Michael McKean as James Earl Jones' role.
there's the 2011 reboot, which I'm very tempted to watch now just for a good laugh. It stars Jason Momoa as Conan.
Really? I thought they did one with The Rock. No?
No, it's Jason. I'm pretty sure it's Jason Momoa.
Wow. Okay, I might check that out.
I liked him as I forget the character's name on Stargate Atlantis. I haven't really liked anything he's done since then. He's kind of the same guy every time, and I just don't see it working for Conan. I've given up trying to say Conan at this point. I'll probably check it out. Maybe I'll be surprised, but I just don't see him pulling off anything better. I mean, it's not going to be worse than Schwarzenegger, of course. And
Right.
maybe he'll do the action stuff better, because I've seen him do action, and he's pretty good at it. But yeah, maybe we're checking out. On the brains.
On the brains.
I'm giving it a brain for Mako, a brain for Sydow and Jones combined, because they didn't have much to do in the movie. And a half a brain because it looks nice. 2.5.
I enjoyed this. I mean, there's a lot of cheese here. There's a lot of some good blood splatter. And then you get these weird Milius monologues, am I getting this right, that this is kind of like the spiritualists are actually the bad guys? And the steel, wielding people are the good guys? I mean,
Well, I mean, the spiritualists are a snake worshipping. Well, I won't put them down for snakes because I love snakes,
yeah.
but they're a death cult, basically.
But, well, yeah, they do turn out to be a death cult in the end, of course. And you kind of get this whole, Milius, Walter anti-hippie parable.
Well, there is that group of, the Children of Death or whatever. He basically comes across this group of hippies who are trying to get him to put down the sword and go with them and just live, on the land. And he kind of just, tells them to fuck off.
And then, of course, that whole throne room, the throne room becomes your prison monologue that they give. So that was pretty cool too. So I'm gonna give it 4, actually, because it's just a lot of fun. I mean, you can't expect Chaucer from Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, fair point.
Only
So, what have we learned?
we learned that he didn't die. He didn't watch his family die face down in the mud in Vietnam just to have his girlfriend killed by an erect snake.
And I learned that you never let the barbarian try to stealth. It's never going to go well.
If your snake is erect for more than 4 hours, you should really
Call a
see a
herpetologist.
physician. Yes.
Anyway, that's it for Conan the Barbarian. Until next time, when we'll be reviewing Cloud Atlas. I can't wait for this. The book is my absolute favorite book of all time. I have serious issues with the movie, of course, that being the case. You've never seen it. I just can't wait for your reaction to the insanity of this movie. Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.